I sat down on a low brick wall that ran around a planted area in front of the apartment house. The subway entrance was 10 feet away. The Crown Vic stayed where it was. Far south of me, the Broadway sidewalk was wide. Adjacent to the retail operations, it was cast from concrete. The half next to the curb was a long subway grate. The subway entrance, 10 feet from me, was a narrow staircase. The south end of the 23rd Street station, the N and the R and the W trains, the uptown platform. I made a bet with myself that it was a heat entrance, a high entry-exit turnstile, not a money wager. Something far more important, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I waited. The guys in the car sat still. At 1:30 in the morning, the subway was well into its nighttime hours. 20-minute gaps between trains. I heard no rumbling or roaring from below. There was no rush of air. The trash on the distant sidewalk grates lay still. The Crown Vic turned its front wheels. I heard the hiss of its power steering pump and the squelch of its tires on the road. It turned sharply across four lanes and straightened through a tight S and stopped on the curb alongside me. The two guys stayed inside. I waited. It was a federal car, for sure. A pool car, standard LX specification, not the police interceptor model. Black paint, plastic wheel covers. The sidewalk wasn't busy, but it wasn't deserted either. People were hurrying home alone or strolling slower in couples. There were clubs on the cross streets to the south. I could tell because small, random knots of dazed people appeared from time to time and craned out into the traffic lanes looking for cruising cabs. The guys in the car moved. One tilted right and one tilted left, the way two people do in a car when they are both groping for the interior door handles at the same time. I watched the subway grates on the sidewalk 40 yards south of me. Nothing doing. Still air, no moving trash. The two guys got out of their car. They were both in dark suits. Their jackets were creased low down and back from driving. The passenger came around and stood with the driver in the gutter, close to the Crown Vic's hood. They were level with me, maybe 20 feet away across the width of the sidewalk. They had their shields already clipped on their breast pockets. FBI, I guessed, although I wasn't close enough to be sure. All those civilian shields look the same to me. The passenger called. Federal agents? As if he needed to. I didn't respond. They stayed in the gutter, didn't step up on the curb. A subliminal defense mechanism, I guessed. The curb was like a tiny rampart. It offered no real protection, but once they breached it, they would have to commit. They would have to act, and they weren't sure how that would go. The subway grates stayed still and silent. The passenger called, "Jack Reacher?" I didn't answer. When all else fails, play dumb. The driver called, "Stay right where you are." My shoes were made of rubber, and much less tight and firm than I am used to. But even so, I felt the first faint pre-echo of subway rumble through them. A train, either starting downtown from 28th Street or heading uptown from 14th. A 50-50 chance. A downtown train was no good to me. I was on the wrong side of Broadway. An uptown train was what I wanted. I watched the distant sidewalk grates. The trash lay still. The passenger called, "Keep your hands where I can see them." I put one hand in my pocket, partly to locate my Metro card and partly to see what would happen next. I knew that Quantico training placed great emphasis on public safety. Agents are instructed to draw their weapons only in situations of dire emergency. Many never draw their weapons at all. All the way from graduation to retirement, not even once. There were innocent people all around, an apartment house lobby directly behind me. The field of fire was high and wide and handsome and full of collateral tragedies just waiting to happen. Passers-by, traffic, babies asleep in low-floor bedrooms. The two agents drew their weapons. Two identical moves, two identical weapons. Glock pistols taken smooth and fast and easy from shoulder holsters. Both guys were right-handed. The passenger called, "Don't move." Far to my left, the trash on the subway grates stirred. An uptown train heading my way. The dam of air in front of it moving fast, building pressure, finding escape. I stood up and walked around the railing to the head of the stairs. Not fast, not slow. I went down one step at a time. Behind me, I heard the agents coming after me, hard soles on concrete. They had better shoes than me. I turned my Metro card in my pocket and pulled it out, facing the right way around. The fare control was high, floor-to-ceiling bars like a jail cell. There were two turnstiles, one on the left, one on the right. Both were narrow and full height. No supervision necessary. No need for a manned booth. I slid my card, and the last credit on it lit up the go-light green, and I pushed on through. Behind me, the agents came to a dead stop. A regular turnstile, he would have jumped right over and explained later, but the unmanned heat entrance took away that option, and they weren't carrying MetroCards of their own. They probably lived out on Long Island and drove to work, spent their days at desks or in cars. They stood helplessly behind the bars. No opportunity for shouted threats or negotiations, either. I had timed it just right. The dam of air was already there in the station, skittering dust and rolling empty cups around. The first three cars were already around the curve. The train yelped and groaned and stopped, and I stepped right on without even breaking stride. The doors closed and the train bore me away, and the last I saw of the agents was the two of them standing there on the wrong side of the turnstile with their guns down by their sides. Chapter 52. I was on an R train. The R train follows Broadway to Times Square and then straightens a little until 57th Street and 7th Avenue, where it hangs a tight right and stops at 59th and 5th, and then 60th and Lex, before heading on under the river and east to Queens. I didn't want to go to Queens. A fine borough, no question, but unexciting at night. And anyway, I felt in my gut that the action lay elsewhere. In Manhattan, for sure. On the east side, probably. And not far from 57th Street. Lila Hoth had used the Four Seasons as a decoy, which put her real base somewhere close by, almost certainly. Not adjacent, but comfortably proximate. And her real base was a townhouse, not an apartment or another hotel, because she had a crew with her, and they had to be able to come and go undetected.